Mrs. Seibert, reel three. We got to the point, I think, when you were at Greenock with this awful draft.
Could I just go back before
yes,
the RMA? There's one, you know, I used to great fun there at early morning, about 5:30. The Lance Bombardiers used to try and detail people. Everybody was permanently on guard if they could catch you. So these in the room, the staircase would run from one door to another, and I can't remember the name of that. One was named Gun, Lance Bombardier Gun. I can't remember the other chap's name, but they would come at this staircase, and you would hear them coming up the stairs, and promptly run the other side as quickly as you could. To avoid being detailed for
guards. It sounds like this draft was having a bit of a bad influence on you. I mean, you know, the two... were you picking up some bad habits from the...
Oh, yes. And, of course, then they eventually split up and come up both staircases. So you go and hide in the cupboards. And, it was a... It was really a continuous sort of trying to best each other. If you couldn't quite avoid them, you were on guard, and that was it. I think what would happen would be that they used to you'd have the permanent staff at these depots. I might be wrong, but it was my opinion that. Their sole purpose was to ensure that they were never sent out to the depot themselves. Everybody but not me. So it seemed that their sole purpose in life was to make things as unpleasant as possible for you. So in many cases you'd volunteer to go somewhere as quickly as possible just not to be in a depot. That's what I found out in later years. As long as you were in the RMA, you were on guard duty. Whether you'd been on all night the previous night, it didn't matter. You were still on guard again if they could catch you. So then, of course, there was little streams of people going sick for some reason or other. I always remember one chap, he went in and the MO said to him, well, what's wrong? He said, my toe is bent over, which it was. And, yeah, absolutely. They promptly decided he preferred his toe. Yeah, but his toe was completely crossed across over his other toes, but he managed with it rather than have it cut off. But anyway, we were going to Greenock.
That's it. And what do you remember? You'd be going on a ship there. Do you remember which ship it was?
I certainly do. It was the Queen Elizabeth.
The liner. And so there'd be a fair amount of troops going on there besides your draft.
Yeah, over 15,000.
What was what were conditions like? I mean, it's a luxury liner, but...
Well, the conditions were appalling. Trying to remember how many of people there were, how many soldiers. We had a small cabin, it was a two-berth cabin, and if I remember rightly, there were 16 of us in there with full kit. And there were bunks, three or four high, three high, I think, rows on either side around the edge. And if one person wanted to get into the gangway, everybody had to be in their bunk. You couldn't have more than you couldn't get out if somebody was in the gangway. So that's what it was like. And I think we were.
What was the food like?
The food was not very good. It was water was rationed to one point a day, to one point and once a day. The officer dropped dead in the underground for some France one day. That was in the culture. But I missed a lot of this because as soon as we were on board, they asked volunteers for the armament for the guns, and I volunteered, and I spent 2 on and 4 off for the whole journey on the forward funnel on with an Orlikan gun, which we were shown how to use, really. And that was it. I was 2 on and 4 off for the whole journey on the Orlikan gun.
So you were better off there than you were in this awful cabin?
Yeah. Mm. Except, of course, you've got no sleep. Well, you didn't get any sleep in the cabin, it was so hot. And they had these ventilators. The chaps on the top bunk could just put their hand out and turn the ventilators on themselves. The old sweat at that time said that you should always have a towel across your stomach. You could pick the line there naked, you see. And I'd been told put a towel across your stomach. But there was a chap on the top bunk. I was on the bottom, and one, two, yes, he was the third one up, and I used to like to, thought it was fair that the ventilator should blow down the middle of the gangway, but as far as anybody put the ventilator at the centre of the gangway, he was lying in the top bunk and just put his hand out and turn it on himself. But one morning he was unconscious there, and he died before midday, and they said it was entirely due to this ventilator lying on him all night. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but all I do know is he died within a matter of hours.
So, what about boat drills? I mean, it sounds very overcrowded. Did you have any practice boat drill?
I did, because I was on the gun, but they did have boat drills occasionally. Boat stations, yes. Show you how what 15,000 plus people on a boat of that size did. We went into Freetown, and there was an aircraft carrier, I don't know the name of it, on one side as we entered into Freetown, but there's a huge river now. And everybody on the boat, on the Elizabeth, rushed to one side to look at it. And I was up on the funnel. And the boat, the Elizabeth, went over like that and was going into Freetown at an angle, and I was more or less looking straight down into the water, and they sounded the boat station to get the Elizabeth ship shape again. But it was amazing that that had an effect on a liner of that size.
So anything else about the journey? You were basically on this gun, the Erlikon. Was there any air?
A couple of things I remember quite vividly that happened at that time. That one lad, they used to like go to sleep on the deck, and one lad had gone to sleep in the shade of one of the boats, and as the liner had had the Elizabeth altered course, as the day went by, the sun came round, and he must have been in the full sun, asleep there. And when they cleared decks, I forget what time they cleared decks, but there's a certain time they cleared decks, everybody was sent below, and he was dead there from the effect of the sun, picked him up from the deck there. It was a different world for the officers on board that, and the nurses, friends and whatnot. it was a different world for them. I used to, the upper decks, it was the promenade deck, a sun deck, promenade deck, and another deck. They were out of bounds. But I could go up, being on the gun, I went up through them and could see what life was like. And I could look through the window into their dining room. And there it was laid out with silver and wine and these flunkies with their cloth over their arms. So I thought, oh my God, what a life are you having? Down below on the mess decks, I know one board officer, he dropped dead as he was asking any complaints. That was when we were going into the Gulf, though. That was the heat. As we went into the Gulf,
they... So you're in Freetown, then? Where after Freetown?
Called in at Simonstown. That was the only time that I, up to then, whether it ever met again, I don't know, that the Elizabeth and the Queen Mary were together. We went lay outside Simonstown for something hours, I forget how many, it might have been a day. They wouldn't have the two liners in the Simonstown together, the risk of one of them or both of them being sunk. They were very scared at that time of the Japanese raiders in the Indian Ocean.
And from Simonstown you went?
From Simonstown we went into the Persian Gulf. There was a scare then one night. I was up on the Oregon, and I suddenly feel the boat surge, and it seemed to be literally throwing itself through the water. And each of these guns had a member of the Navy, a sailor with it. He was in charge. And the volunteers made up the gun crew. The sailor was in charge of each gun. And he said, there's something on, I'll go and find out. And he came back. He said, there's a scare with a raider being in the Indian Ocean. And he said, they say that the ship is doing 42 knots. And if it was, well, it was incredible. The way that boat was, you could feel it. The whole boat was shaking. And the sense of power was unbelievable.
But nothing occurred.
No.
Just a false alarm, or they got away, weren't they?
Yeah. Wouldn't yes. They?
What next, do you remember?
Well, about the boat. About the as we went into the Gulf, they were regularly stand to there, and they had the whole of the soldiers on board lined up on the decks with whatever arms were to hand, machine guns, rifles, everything. They had them lined up with thousands and thousands of them. And the defensive fire that would have gone up would have been enormous, because there was all the infantry with the grand guns and whatnot. I don't know how many ballicans there were on board. And then they had these parachute, I don't know what they were called, but they were like mortars with a parachute with a wire on, which they could fire up. But I don't know what they called. Idea was that the plane would fly into the fires. And then as we went further thing I remember was as we went into the into the Red Sea, the heat was unbearable. If you were below decks, it was terrible. And being most of the time on the gun, I was watching the burial parties every night. They were throwing them overboard every night.
Still a fair number of casualties. I mean, you've mentioned three or four just from your
I don't know how many. There's probably a record of it somewhere, but probably smaller than I would think. But I remember there were burials every night as we went into the along the Red Sea. But the heat was terrible. It was an absolute hellship as far as I was concerned. I travelled on landing craft in the hold of. I was on the Junera, which had, I think it had a peacetime capacity of about, it was a pre-war troop ship, and that had, I think, a peacetime capacity of 1,000 troops, but it was, I was travelled on it from Greece to Italy when it had 5,000 on board, and it was comfortable.
So it really was bad on the Queen Elizabeth.
Well, it was bad, yes. And it was the only journey ever made into the tropics. You see, it was built for the North Atlantic run. It was built for the tropics. And it was after the hell ship.
So, where did you port side or port side?
Oh, yes, we went to the Tewfik.
Tewfik.
I think it was Tewfik, yes. Fairly certain it was Tewfik. And somewhere near port side. And then the blighters marched us to Cairo. So this was showing the flag. We marched through Cairo, and I suppose it was to impress the Egyptians. All these reinforcements arrived.
How did your draft behave? Right, we found
as usual. As usual, and then we marched into Al Marja, which was the VDRA, Base Depot Royal Artillery, where we were all made life members at the cost of 1 6 months. Those base boys might have had a fine old time on my 1 6 months.
Life members of what?
Base Depot Royal Artillery. I still got it in my Facebook, life member.
And what
happened? One and sixpence, these thousands of one and sixpence went, I don't know.
And what were you doing at the base depot?
We were quite hastily climbing out of the depot. I think I said to you earlier, we were all drafting into a force they called Rees Force. It was a Brigadier Rees.
R-E-E-S.
R-E-E-S. And nobody's ever heard of him. That's the only time I ever heard of him. But,
and what was the composition of this force?
Anybody. They mostly gunners. There must have been some NCOs, but I don't remember them. I remember one, two officers. But it wasn't a cohesive force in any way. People seemed to be going in all directions, making, as I said previously, putting in mostly barbed wire areas, cages for presumably the tanks and that to drive into, where they would be forced into minefields and whatnot. There was occasional traps,
So you weren't an artillery unit, you were just a body of men?
Body of men, yeah.
And where were you operating?
Anywhere from Alamein back to the Delta, if I remember rightly.
The El Alamein lines had been occupied by before the battle. This is sort of June, in the summer of...
They were putting up the defences mainly for a breakthrough, if there'd been a breakthrough from Alamein.
And how did you go about doing these boxes, the barbed wire areas and wire areas? What exactly were you doing?
They seemed to be building them in triangles. I mean, we were not told what the plans were. All we were told was to, right, you drive this in the stake, iron stake in here, and follow these directions of somebody knew what they were doing, but we didn't. And as I could recall, these basically, mainly, were in a form of a triangle.
And it was barbed wire?
Barbed wire.
Mines as well, or just barbed wire?
the engineer then came and put in the mines. Sometimes we planted cartridges, which if stood on, I don't know how exactly they worked, but they would, the bullet would go off.
And how thick was the wire? I mean, was the whole triangle solid with wire, or was it just...
Oh, no, no, it was a page, more or less. And, of course, it... I'm trying to remember the name for it now, but...
Dannet wire? Dannet wire?
No. No, the entanglements that we were built, we were putting in, they were, of course, you had the concertina wire, but the other entanglements would be in a V shape, extending over about 5 feet in width. Yeah.
What else were you doing? Or was that it?
Mainly, that was it. Sometimes going to collect ammo and odds and ends from the ammo dumps. They did have a main one in the Dead City, not far from Cairo. You could only go there with, you couldn't get out of the traps because of the wild dogs. But, have you heard of the Dead City? Yeah. I'm not quite sure what it would have been, old Cairo or what, but it was quite a lot of mud area, a lot of mud buildings, but it completely deserted. And they had an ammo dump there, which we had to go to the plane. You get in the traps and drive 50, 60 miles. Get a load of ammo to take back.
And that was for other units, for artillery units.
Yeah.
And how are you finding the climate?
Well, I should think, how long was that force in existence? For about 3 or 4 months, I should think. And it was midsummer then, of course, and very hot indeed. Everybody had either got a dysentery or jibby tummy, as they called it. Everybody was smothered in desert sores and bandages, flies. If you hadn't got the sore banded out, the flies would have to attack it and pick it clean. They're biting all around you.
Did you get desert sores?
Oh, yeah.
Was there any treatment?
Not as far as we were concerned. People were just putting up with it. There was a first aid tent where you could go and get ointment or something, rub on, but nobody was being sent back.
And what food were you getting when you were out?
Camel meat, sometimes.
What was that like?
Terrible. People wouldn't eat it. They'd just go hungry.
What was so bad?
It would come in sandbags and in cubes, like a twice the size of an oxo cube, and it was, to try and eat it was like chewing a lump of India rubber, and the stench of it. What would happen would be that somebody would get on a 1500 weight drive off with it and come back with some eggs from the Egyptians. So funny enough, wherever you went, you could be seemingly in the middle of the desert, and within a minute or so of stopping the trap, an Egyptian, or they were Bedouins of some sort, would immediately pop out from under a rock with a tooth full of eggs. Eggs of bread. And they had some beautiful bread. No one.
And what about the rest of your rations? Camel meat, not a success.
What they term soya links. You heard of soya links?
Soya link sausages.
There's sausages made from soya beans.
What were they like?
baked beans, that they had an effect on the body, and so that they. Perhaps I shouldn't say this, but there used to be contests.
What kind of contest? Don't worry, there are you.
Well, who breaking wind, in other words, who would be the longest? There were stories that, but I can't vouch for this. There were stories that some people could blow out a jet of flame if it was a match.
But you never tried that.
No, but I think there might be an element of truth in it.
What about, what other food? No bully then?
Yes, we did get bully, which you had to, was always melted in the tin, you had to eat it with a spoon. But the soy links were the main stay, and...
So no fresh vegetables or anything like that? Quite hence perhaps the desert sores. Were you staying out in the desert?
On the delta or in the desert, yeah.
And what were you had trucks, I presume? That
we didn't have trucks, but trucks came from somewhere.
So you were just a body of, you were gunners, but you were being treated like pioneers almost.
Yeah.
Any other duties you had to do?
No, I don't recall anything apart from that. Of course, you had your usual guard duties, where you, if you were on the delta, you had to sleep on your rifle. You had to take the bolt out of the rifle, tie it around the neck, dig a slight trench underneath you, and put your ground truth down and your rifle, sleep on top of the rifle, and they were still getting stolen.
That's by the Arabs / Egyptians or whatever. How did you get on with the Egyptians?
A lot of the Egyptians I found were quite the educated Egyptians were quite helpful, quite easy to get on with. I think there was a resentment, which there must have been, against the British. The Fellaheen, they were badly treated by their own people. And I thought that, in the main, they were regarded with contempt by a lot of British troops. I don't think they... I think it was a question of ignorance. I was never all that happy about the way that some of the British troops dealt with the Egyptians. I thought it was contemptible at times. They regarded them, not that the soldiers regarded themselves as superior.
So what would they do?
Oh, probably then kick them, anything. I didn't like it.
But that was quite common then. You were the one who was out of the ordinary then.
Oh no, I wouldn't say that. But there were a surprising number of British troops that I would regard as on an animal level.
So they were the minority then, not your. No.